going to turn things over right now to our counselors roundtable. We've got Counselor Sabine Dietz and Counselor Michael Tower joining us today. Hi, folks.
Good evening.
Hi, good evening.
Thank you for joining us again for another edition of the roundtable to talk a little bit of SHOP before you head into your regular council meeting on Monday. I wanted to start off talking about sort of the big item on the agenda for Monday, which is the 2022 budget. It's a big, complicated document. And now, and Sabine Dietz, we've spoken to you on Tantrum Our Report before. You've talked a bit about some of the changes that you had proposed. I guess my question is the document or what you will approve on Monday, what you've been asked to approve on Monday as a council. You know, how much of the changes that you proposed will make their way into that discussion on Monday?
So can I just ask you, Erica, whether media has already received the package for Monday? Like, have you received it yet?
We have seen the package, yeah. I've seen the package, which includes, I don't see the motions, though. You should know that we get the reports.
You get
the
package.
Yeah. Yeah,
but not the motions. And you in the package, I think, if I'm not mistaken, I'm just scrolling through because I also only got it today. I think there's a link to the budget document.
That appears to be the same one that was discussed on October 18th, 19th. So there's not a lot of new detail. So I guess you're in the same position as we are, just in terms of not knowing exactly what is up for approval on Monday.
No, we know what's, I mean, the budget is up for approval. So we do have the motions, but you see the 2022 draft budget that you have or you have access to via the town's SACL website is, I think, almost identical to the one that we got presented. I think I'm correct with that, Mike, right?
Yes.
Yeah. So that answers your question, what made it into this version of the budget?
So nothing, none of the changes that you proposed?
Correct.
Okay. So,
can I go back to sort of and I think I mentioned that when we discussed this, why I made those changes, not because of climate change, but because of I guess the attempt to start incorporating considerations into our operations and thinking about what we do as a town, right? So that was my underlying reason. And what I did with the document that I also posted and that is publicly available and that I sent to staff and to the other counselors, I basically just outlined some I call it fiddling, I guess the treasurer would call it adjustments. I outlined some fiddling that could be done with a budget, moving of some items that could permit for certain of the actions that I was proposing. I guess I don't see those changes in the budget, which I understand, and I think I will talk to that on Monday.
Okay.
So, and I'd like to leave it at that because, so I've had some conversations with other counselors as well as with staff about it. So, and I'd like to talk to that on Monday in public during the council meeting.
All right. Well, I guess we should mention what it is that we're talking about, which is that Councillor Dietz, you had presented the big idea was that the town should have a climate contingency fund, so that there was money set aside every year in the budget to be able to at the last minute or very very nimbly for the town to make changes to different projects to make them more climate friendly, whatever that might be. Say they had to use the example of, using a lot more asphalt than you thought you were going to. Could you make up for it by doing something else like a tree planting project or something like that?
Correct.
Something to balance things out. And so that idea, I guess, is still not there. Let me ask Councillor Tower, Michael Tower, what were your thoughts about Sabine Dietz's proposals?
I actually like where she's going with her proposals. I don't have the same vast knowledge she does when it comes to the green, but climate change is climate change, and I'm learning more all the time. And so I like a lot of her suggestions. I look forward to them coming up during the debate when the budget comes forward. I support her idea of having a contingency fund. I think we need to invest, and if that means setting a fund up, which I think we should, then we should go ahead and do it. You know, we plan for a lot of things. We set money aside for doing our phase one, two, and now three. We do all kinds of things along that line. But unless we're going to really show that we want to make a commitment to combating climate change, then we have to invest in it. And I think that Sabine has chose some nice areas where we could do that. So I like her ideas.
All right. Yeah. And so we will have to wait. You're not going to give us a sneak peek of your thoughts on this, Sabine, in terms of what you're how you're going to approach this. But there has been no further meetings. Like, if there's things to discuss in the budget, I gather staff will call another meeting so council can get together and discuss it. But that hasn't happened. And there doesn't seem to be any other documentation coming out with discussing the proposal that you made at all.
Yeah, correct. There's two things that maybe I should I really don't want to spoil it for Monday, because I think this needs to be happening in council, and I'm really, you know, also curious on sort of other reactions. But I guess there's different ways of skinning this pig, and I shouldn't use pig because, you know, that's, yes, anyway, but there's different ways of approaching that. And the contingency fund was one way of doing it, or is one proposal of doing it. But there's other ways. And I think, you know, I'm hoping that we can have that discussion a bit more in detail on Monday. What do we actually want to do? You know, go this route with the approach that I suggested originally, or maybe adjust it in a way that maybe even more profound. So anyway, thank you, Councillor Tower, for supporting me in this. I appreciate that. I think, you know, I get the sense that we're all really, we really want to do things in terms of action on climate change. And I have sort of that feeling that we are going to move forward on this over the next year and two quite significantly. So, but I'm going to talk a bit more on Monday.
Mm-hmm. All right.
So not too many spoiler alerts there.
That's right.
Let me ask you both one more question about climate and budget. And that's the Mayor's Roundtable folks, a few of them, Richard Elliott, Barb Clayton, and the name of the new climate change coordinator for the town.
Kirsty, yeah.
Kirsty Mrazek, that's right.
Yes.
They presented, at council's budget meeting to discuss the budget. One of the observations there was that the gas tax fund, now this is actually now called the Canada Building Fund, I believe, but Maritimers mm-hmm. will always call the gas tax fund, because they always use the name first used for something and they will never change. So we'll call it the gas tax fund for clarity. They've asked that this not be sort of designated as a roads fund, which it sort of appears to be in the two budgets that I've witnessed come through the town. The whatever amount that's in the gas tax fund goes towards road work. And that number that's in the gas tax fund actually fluctuates a lot. So that's sort of, I guess, one argument behind, like, why would we only designate it for roads if it suddenly goes up by hundreds of thousands of dollars in a given year? I'll start with you, Michael. Did you have thoughts on, and I know Michael Beale, the treasurer, has said that, well, you know, we spend this gas tax fund on road work, but that frees up money to spend the rest of our budget on other things. So it's not as if we're not going to be spending money on road work. But what did you think of that presentation? And do you agree that maybe we should be not designating that gas tax fund for that particular purpose?
Well, I'm not against the purpose of what we're doing for it right now, because that was a decision of council, and they have changed their minds anyway, shape or form. If, and I understand Michael Beale when he says that because we put it to the roads, it gives us the ability to put funds out of our budget into other places, as in maybe a climate change fund or whatever. One of the great advantages is, I think, that if we did make a switch, that we could say, 20% of our gas tax fund goes to the climate change fund, so that we build up a reserve and have contingency sitting there. That would allow us a certain dollar value in there. And if the federal government decides to bump it up again or increase the amount, then that would also allow more money to go into it. So I think that's a valid argument as a way to show our continued and future support of this program. So those are pretty smart people who have come up with some of those ideas, and I think council should definitely look at this one also.
Sabine, did you have thoughts on what the Mayor's Roundtable folks were saying about the designation of that gas tax fund money?
Yeah, and I'm frustrated that we're putting so much money into road patching and road reconstruction. So that's just a frustration. And the next fiscal year is bumped up by $300,000, which, you know, that's one of the biggest fluctuations. And that's simply because there was an additional amount of funding that was provided by the province this year that is being carried over into 2022. So that's that big lump sum that I've added. That's why it looks so inflated. And it does look really inflated. I think many folks in SACL will be really happy with this amount because we've had some road problems, put it mildly, over the last summer. And Mr. Acton would would agree with me on that one, our bumps in the roads along the way to patching some streets. So while I say I'm frustrated, I think that fund and Mr. Beale may be able to clarify that on Monday. That fund, we couldn't put it in a contingency fund in the first place because it is literally allocated for capital expense on the various things that can be done. We just chose to use it for roads. It can be used for some other infrastructure projects. So it can't necessarily be put into a fund that is a long-term contingency idea. And I think I mentioned this at the meeting in any case on October 25th, that contingency wasn't meant as a long-term. So there may be challenges around that in any case. Mm-hmm. Nevertheless, having so much money, so much of our budget, overall budget that's available to do anything in this community allocated to road work, is quite frustrating. Mm-hmm. But again, you know, I'm also thinking there's, like when I mentioned, you know, there's different ways of skinning the cat and I'm going to ask that question on Monday. I can give that away, but if we don't move the money out of road work, then can we alternately, the way I would have used the contingency fund, can we alternately incorporate into that road work things that offset the impacts on climate change, greenhouse gas emissions increase through doing road work or doing some adaptation work, you know, tree planting, all these kind of things. The proposal that Mr. Yarcha put forward in terms of 30-kilometer speed limit in the downtown area, that would count as a way of, okay, so if we want this as council, which is a whole process to go through, if we want this as council and community, then slowing down in the downtown actually reduces greenhouse gas emissions. But if we do that, we would want to consider bike lanes, you know, setting some area aside where bicycles feel safe. So all of this thing, I think, and we'll get the answer on Monday, could be incorporated into the projects that deal with road work. So instead of using a contingency fund to do this, it gets incorporated right from the start into the work that you're planning to do anyway. That will, for example, have an impact on, so you can't spend as much on pure asphalt work, because you need to put money aside to implement whatever other activities you do around the road work that help both with water runoff and adaptation action and help with offsetting, reducing the greenhouse gas emissions overall of the project. So, you know, when I said you can skin the, it's usually skin the cat, but I don't like to do the skin the pig. Anyway, you can do things in different ways. Well, maybe if it's possible to incorporate these kind of actions into projects that use the building infrastructure or gas tax fund, then we don't need to move money aside for it, but it gets automatically incorporated in the work. So, you know, maybe that's also a way of doing this. I don't know, but I'll ask that on Monday.
Right. It sounds like you're saying maybe we need sort of a policy for our capital projects to say that they can only have this much, you know, so much impact on the climate without us doing something to compensate for that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Now I will mention that there is a, you know, you mentioned the gas tax fund, of course, is reserved for capital projects. So that's a very good point. It's not an operating fund. You can't just put it in to do the yearly sort of work of the municipality. There are some long-term capital projects on the table, and there was a couple that came up this week, and that won't necessarily be discussed on Monday, but they're worth mentioning. One is that council got back or heard back from staff with a cost estimate on a new multi-purpose building. That was a what's called a Class D estimate. It's sort of like, it sounds like the roughest number they can possibly come up with, just sort of based on square footage and a few other things, I think. And it was $3.4 million for about an 11,000 square foot building that would be able to accommodate the market and a gymnasium and a number of recreation spaces and sort of a rough plan like that. Initial reaction to that number, Councillor Tower?
I wasn't shocked by the number. I think the number's low. I think it's going to come in higher than that, which I think we have to be prepared for. I like the idea of what we're trying to put into the building. I think we still need to approach the high school, find some way to communicate with the high school, see what they're looking for, what they would like to see in the building. And the seniors have not been contacted over this yet. They would have their own little feedback on that. But I think we're going in the right direction. I think there's support around the town for doing it. When it comes to fundraising, we'll see just how much there is. But, if it stated that ballpark figure, I'd be pleasantly surprised.
Yeah.
But, you know, and I... it. Yeah, I think we need more information. So,
Well, Councillor Dietz, you mentioned that you were supportive of moving forward with a continued process around this idea, and that involved, you know, public consultation and that sort of thing. What were you thinking there?
Yeah, and you know, Councillor Tower was indicating that already, that there are a lot of conversations that need to be had with different potential users of this building. You know, our very thriving culture scene, culture and arts scene, you know, our theaters, companies, we have to take a hard look at what we have available and what would be great to have, and then come up with sort of this list, this famous list of wants, and then, you know, do we need to cut it down to the needs, or can we accommodate all the wants? And it's a bit black and white saying wants and needs, because cultural and arts needs are also really important in this for mental health and for just being active and out there and creativity. So I'm not saying that it's one is more important than the other, but the community will have to eventually make some decisions to keep this project under control. I was not surprised by the price tag either, just because this was such a rough estimate, and it was just put out to the consultant to say, just give us a rough estimate, throw all of these different things in. If you know the Buktusch building, this is a market building with some other functionality included as well. if I'm not mistaken, it also went way over budget, but it was more, I think, half of that amount that we got quoted. And there was some mention of the Shediac multipurpose building, which is a gigantic, oversized building that, you know, one could debate whether this is something we want to look at. So there are so many different options and such a need to have these conversations in the community. So what am I thinking about is, well, we need to have those conversations with the different stakeholders that might want to or need to use a facility like this, evaluate what other facilities we have and how adequate, appropriate they are, and explore what other uses there could be if it is a bigger building where we, for example, rent space during the week and use it for other purposes on the weekend, such as the market. So it's a real solid exploration of this kind of type of space for the community. There are good examples across the province and beyond in terms of what such a building, whether it is more limited use or broader use, can actually do for a community. If it's set up in a way that it can become really a cornerstone or a centerpiece for the community. So that's my thinking, and I'm happy to see it go forward. I'm happy to see an engagement process hopefully being put in place that talks with folks, and then you know, council needs to have those strategic decisions around you know, this is what is the top absolute you know, cream of, you know, cake with a cream on top and a cherry on top, and this is where we think we can actually go and still, you know, be reasonable in terms of cost and price, and be also respondent to the needs in the community and the wants, right? So I think the opportunities, and I also, it was also very clear on during the meeting that we did not want to close the door to potentially moving forward with such a project if there was some opportunity such as, you know, federal funding for community initiatives such as this. There have been, especially in terms of COVID recovery, you know, infrastructure funding, and you know, it seemed to be that if it comes up, we also want to be nimble enough to be able to take advantage of such an opportunity. But you know, I think it's important that we take the time, and I remember before council was elected there were some discussions, and you know, there was really an interest on the previous council as well to ask more questions in the town by of residents and potential users to just figure out what it would be used for, how it would be used, when it would be used, and how could this be, you know, partially at least sustainable in terms of, you know, getting some revenues from a building like this through maybe rent or things like that, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, it's an interesting conversation that's going to happen around it, I guess. And I mean, we should say it's a few years out. So when town presented this information, they said this puts it in special project category, and they also said that it that means, you know, Lorne Street Phase 3 is first in line in the queue. So we're not looking at really debating, like, actually budgeting for this quite yet, but I guess as you said, Councillor Dietz, the process, the discussion around it needs to start now, because that could itself take a long time.
Exactly.
I wanted to ask about one more potential capital project on the horizon, and that is you're going to be asked on Monday to approve, I think, $12,500 to be spent on a study for a concrete skate park. And we've talked a lot about skateboarding in the last little while because of the changes to the streets bylaw. And the you know, discussion of the skate park did come up quite a bit during that discussion. And this was also, I guess, this dates back to last year's budget meetings when the community members presented and someone made a request saying that, you know, the current Sackville skate park is not great, and we, you know, we should be looking at doing a concrete skate park, which has sort of become the sort of standard in a lot of towns, especially around the Maritimes. That kind of project could have a hefty price tag. Now, I guess this study will tell us or what kind of price tag we're looking at. Do you, you know, we could be looking at $400,000, $500,000 is what I've heard of, about some different parks. What are, you know, I'd like to hear each of you on your thoughts about, you know, this project, its viability. Do you think council will get behind it, behind spending money on skateboarders who, you know, up till recently weren't, you know, even banned from streets? So what do you think? Who wants to take a stab? I've been going to Michael Tower first, but maybe I'll go to Sabine Dietz first this time.
Sure. I think I'm actually really glad that this study is going to be undertaken, because, you know, I'm not a skateboarder. I see skateboarders since I'm on the road with my bike. You know, I see them. I also follow sort of the trend on skateboarding. I think this was the first time that skateboarding was part of the Olympics this last summer. So, I think better understanding sort of the needs around, well, what is it actually we need? Who's actually using it? And would they be using it? And what would it have to be really attractive? All of those things should be part of a feasibility study. And I assume that's what we're getting. So we'll have some background information. We'll also know better for, you know, as it was explained, for our size, what would be the appropriate size of skate park? And it doesn't even make sense, right? So I'm happy we're doing this. To be really honest, $500,000 for a skate park seems to be, to me right now, really over the top. But I don't deny that we need more facilities for recreational activities. So I'm waiting for the feasibility study. And I think at that time, I'm hoping that we can have some not just discussions among council, but hopefully also conversation with potential users, both from the university community as well as from our high schools and any adults that are doing their skateboarding, just to have a conversation around that. Because I'm not one who is in favor of this idea that you build it and they will come. I've seen so many failures on that front. So. And that's why this feasibility study beforehand is good. That's why likely we need to engage with the different users beforehand to see whether it actually makes sense in terms of how many users we have, how often would they be using it, and are there other skate parks that they would prefer to go? Because I don't think we can compare with the Moncton skate park. I drive by that frequently and I know what it looks like, but I don't think we can compete with that one. That's a big one and quite a fancy, you know, layout on all that. So, and Moncton is a huge community compared to us, so we're really tiny. That's my thoughts on that, waiting to see, and let's have conversations about it.
Yeah, Moncton is quite a large park. I think Amherst has a more modest size, but also quite a popular one. Michael Tower, did you know, what did you think when this came forward? Do you think you'll be supporting it next week?
I do believe that we need to invest in a skateboard park. It was part of my election talk as I was going door to door. Back in, I think it was 2013, there was a basic council support for the idea. We had a skateboard group put together that was talking about raising funds, but somewhere along the line they sort of broke up because of, well, I have no idea what reasons why, but there is still interest. I've talked to a few people before the election who were interested in being involved with it. I think we need the study. I agree with Sabine are we ready to invest $600,000 into a skateboard park? I don't know. If we did, can it be done in phases, you know? I know that if you go quite elaborate, then they're all tied and twisted together, joined, and so it can't be done in phases. But I would also like to get the information out of Amherst, because they went through a process also, and they have a nice skateboard park over there. Some people from Sackville use it, and I know there's a couple from Moncton that go over there. So I agree we should find out more information. And then I think we also have to know the people who are really committed to it in Sackville and really want the skateboard park, and how much are they willing to get behind the whole process. Is it going to be something right on the forefront? I don't think so with everything we got happening. We're lucky that we have Jeanette Petipaw-Taylor in a prime situation now, and of course Dominic LeBlanc. So we have access to getting funds, but at what point do we say, okay, now we're looking for funds for the skateboard park? So I think we need to study, and we also have to know what the people who use it want. And once we get that kind of idea, the report telling us the basic what we can look at to put in there is one thing, but then is also how many people are going to be interested in getting behind it. Mm-hmm. We have to spread our dollars out and support different groups, but we also have to balance the budget out over periods of 4 to 6 years. And with phase one on the go, we got this multi-purpose building happening. So where does that put the skateboard park? Which means, can it be done in phases? Okay, then we could possibly bring some of it in. But I'm in support of doing of the motion coming forward in that manner.
All right. Well, it'll be interesting to see what New Line Skate Parks comes up with. Now, a few other things, coming up on Monday. One, you're going to be asked to close a few streets for Moonlight Madness, which the town is taking over, which is interesting. The town recreation department, and we'll be talking to Matt Pride on Tanchamar Report tomorrow, actually, about the plans for that. The BIA, the Business Improvement Area, made a presentation to council on Monday. It seems that the BIA, after a period of sort of dormancy, is coming back to life. Although, now we've got the recreation department sort of taking over this Moonlight Madness as an event. I noticed, a local business closed down, or at least has changed hands. I guess the snack shop on York Street has closed down. And so, how are you both feeling about the local business community and what the town can do to support it and that sort of thing?
I think that this is going to be a prime way for council to support the business community. I think having it done by the town is going to take a lot of pressure off the business people who try to get together for lining up this event or that event, and that they themselves have to work to make sure the business is ready to go. So if we can set up the program for them and put different items in place, that allows the business to focus on what they will put out on the streets for getting behind this project and for driving the energy of the business out there. I think the public's going to love it. So I like what we're doing. I think Matt has done a really good job here. And when you hear everything that he's going to be telling you, you're going to be, I think, quite impressed. So, I think it's a fabulous idea.
Go ahead, Sabine. So I'm really pleased to see the BIA refreshed and renewed, because I know that's been sort of a challenge over the years. My background with who managed or who led the Midnight Madness and some of the other activities in town is a little bit more skimpy than Councillor Towers. But it wasn't a big stretch to say, of course, the town should take on the biggest part of organizing this. There's much more capacity than in a volunteer board of directors, which I think they've got a budget of $25,000 for all the stuff that they want to do, the various smaller initiatives to improve attractiveness downtown, basically. So in that sense, that's great. I agree. I think, Mr. Pride has a lot of experience and a lot of, with his team, organizing these kind of things now. So it's in good hands there. And if the BIA is in agreement with that, which that's what seems to be they wanted, then by all means, so they can spend more effort on some of the other initiatives they want to look at. I think also the relationship between the BIA, from what I see, and the town is pretty nice now. It's pretty good. So, you know, collaborating on the passport, and it's not like the town has taken over Midnight Mass. It's just more of all the logistical and doing things, but they're still partnering on this. So I think it's all good around. There are only so many ways that the town can support businesses, but and the downtown, but that is one of them. It's one of them supporting the BIA. If the BIA can't pull something off because the capacity is just not there in a volunteer board, then for the town to take it on with the support of the BIA and input and collaboration, then by all means, if we can help that way so they can do some other things. Anyway, I like where this is going, and I think through the BIA, hopefully the town, like, we will get information on how else we can collaborate and do things together. You know, clearly identified, clear a channel of communication. That's the most important thing in this. Make sure we understand what's needed on their end and on our end, then respond to with the things that we can do as a town.
All right. One of the other things you're going to make a decision about on Monday is a new bylaw. Just a first reading of it, so this isn't the final look at it, but it will be read. It's a bylaw to tackle the problem of flyers. Some people love them, some people hate them. As we heard at the council meeting, we heard from sort of both camps, people talking about, somebody's mother called them if they don't get the flyer on the day it's supposed to arrive, but then other people have been calling to try and stop the flyers from coming, being thrown on their driveways for years to no avail. I was one of the lucky ones. I called and it stopped coming. So, but I have heard from many people that that's not always the case. So it's kind of a mystery. This flyer bylaw will make it so that people can officially opt out by putting a sign on their window, or, you know, there's not a lot of mailboxes, but mailboxes are on window, to say no flyers, please. And then if a flyer is delivered, then it will be sort of an infraction of that bylaw. What are your thoughts? Do you think this is going to work, Councillor Tower?
I think it will, especially if we enforce it. I like the way we're doing it, is opt out and not have to opt in, because there are people out there that like the flyers. I like the flyers, but I don't like them laying in driveways and ditches, side of the road. So I think this is going to correct the issue, and it won't lay in my driveway anymore. It's supposed to be on my doorstep from that point onward. So, but there's a good number of people who still like getting the flyers, and I think this bylaw is being formed correctly. The opt-out is the best way. I know that people like you, Erica, have called and had the flyer stopped, but I was also told that after 6 months, it would start up again. And some other people told me after 3 months, it started up again. But if you get that sign at the end of your driveway, which you really shouldn't have to put it down there, because the bylaw is going to say, no, take it up to the house. Then if they have it up there in the window and they still deliver it, I think after, you know, two or three infractions, they would quickly adjust and stop sending it where they shouldn't be. So this has been a long time coming. It's a bone of contention for a lot of people. So, yeah, this is a fabulous bylaw, and I definitely will support it.
All right. Sabine Dietz, opt-in or opt-out, what do you think is the best way to go?
Yeah, so I think I was actually surprised, and I did ask the question why staff went this way in choosing this option. So, you know, just to go back, the biggest problem with the flyers were literally the flyers in the driveway, and they stay there for weeks and weeks and then would accumulate, and they're still doing it. You know, again, there are several driveways here between on Church Street down High Marsh Road that just have flyers, and some of the houses are empty, or some people have long driveways and they just drive over the flyers once they, you know, our pink bags. And that happened last winter. And so it was a really frustrating thing to see. So originally that came from a point of view that we just got garbage in this town. That's not necessary to have. Coming from that, and this is the solution to this problem. Definitely the solution is presented. Now, the other question, whether flyers are good or not, that's a whole different conversation. And I think it's never good to force people not to receive something, like, you know, a blanket, just this town doesn't accept any flyers. That sounds a little bit dictatorial. So I don't think any of us should go that way anyway. And the process of eliminating a flyer from our society, that's a totally different discussion, right? So I think this is good. I also think the specification of where the flyers need to go if you get them delivered. So they are, I don't like on the doorstep, but okay, if that's what we need to have to still keep Councillor Tower happy, that's fine. In general, they should go into a mailbox or something. And I know that people will have to put some of these boxes up to be able to continue receiving them. But I think that's a nice balance. At least we eliminate the garbage from the driveways. I'm actually pretty pleased with this one. I really like, except on the doorstep, of course. But anyway, I really like it. I've called the current pink pink bag distributor, I think in the spring, and I haven't seen any in our driveway since. And then I received flyers through Canada Post, and we've had a sign on our mailbox forever. And all of a sudden, I think this year, all of a sudden, Canada Post no longer accepts when you put your sign on the mailbox, no flyers. You actually need to call Canada Post. Anyway, this is a complicated matter. I think this is the right thing for us to do. I think it's a good balance. I really like it. I really like what they did with this bylaw. So.
All right. Sounds good. Sounds like we might even have a unanimous vote. We'll have to see. There's a lot of people around the table, so I guess
that's correct.
That depends. There's one other sort of housekeeping. It's a housekeeping issue that you will be passing a change to the council remuneration bylaw, just to the appendix, just sort of updating it. I won't ask you about what your salary should be, but many do say it is an underpaid job, which possibly limits the field in terms of who can step forward to run for council when the time comes. But I don't want to ask you what your pay should be right now, but I will ask you this just to get your opinions. Should councillors be in charge of setting their own salaries? What do you think? Should that be a council matter, or should we find another place to decide that? Anyone want to weigh in?
I can weigh in. It's a good question. But by the way, on the salary, I think the salaries are actually available on the website.
Yes.
So I don't think anybody has any problem finding that. And I think the per diems are also on the website. I'm not sure if our benefits package is on the website. I think it also depends on how much work you do as a counselor. In any case, putting all of that aside, I mean, who else are you going to say how much mayor and councillors receive as compensation for being part of a municipal government? I don't know who else would do that. And I would hope that there's always people around the table who can think this through and honestly, evaluate how much work they put in. It's a bit... You know, I mean, we do agree to sit on council, or I did anyway, without the expectation of being compensated for my work. It was never in my head. So running for public office, I think, will always have that kind of you do extra work and you do it because you want to contribute to the community. Right. So there's always this. Mm-hmm. On one hand, but I also admit you know, sometimes it's, I think it can be quite a burden on people when they take this seriously and actually do a lot of work and put a lot of work behind it. So, and I do understand that it is a lot easier being retired and doing this work than, you know, working full time as I and some others are doing that are sitting on council. But it is what it is. In terms of voting on our salaries, I hope that I don't have to do that during my term. I just rather not touch it because it is highly uncomfortable in the first place. But I also don't know who else would do that.
All right. Michael Tower, did you have any thoughts on that?
I agree a lot with what Savannah is saying there. When I first got on council, I'm working full time. I'm working one week days, one week late. And I used to use about 2 weeks vacation a year to do council business. When I became a manager, it freed up my nights. I got support from MB Liquor to run for council again. As a manager, they like to have some kind of control. But I also informed them that there would be days I would have to work. I'd have to go to a meeting in the afternoon or lunchtime. So I needed their support on that, and they did. So I understand what Sabine says, being retired, you have more time. There's no doubt about it. And there's a lot of work you can put in on this, and you can also skimp on it. I think part of the conversation in council has been, since the federal government made changes on our pay, where one-third used to be tax-free, they changed that aspect. And so the conversation was, well, now you've lost that kind of money. Well, we did lose money, but not as much as one-third, because you had to claim one-third more on your income tax. And so what difference did that make on your income tax? Did you have to pay another $140 or whatever? So it wasn't a drastic loss. And when it comes to ours, what is it, 0.92 or something percent of the cost of living, there were 4 years, no, pardon me, 6 years while working with Angry Liquor, I didn't get any pay raise through them. So I haven't paid a great deal of attention to the fact that it's only that amount. Be like Amherst and go ahead and vote for ourselves and give us a nice 8,000 or whatever it was increase. I don't think I could do that. I don't know who you would get to do the assessment of, you know, comparing us to other municipalities and then how do you balance it out?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. I mean, I know sometimes municipalities for decisions like even, you know, redrawing boundaries. We don't have districts in Sackville, of course. We just have, you're all at large, so you all represent everybody. But, sometimes those questions will be, like, thrown to a committee or some sort of, like, other legal group that's given that power. But, I mean, because it is, like, as you say, it's a tough decision. You can't, you know, you'd appear self-serving if you gave yourself a raise. But if you're, you know, sort of lowering your own salary, that's also, you know, there's impacts, I guess. But we should say, and you pointed out that there is a cost of living increase built into the bylaw. So it's not that you do get those steady increases. There will be adjustments, I guess, to the amount that you get in remuneration. Before we run out of time, I want to spring another topic on you. Now, this is not something that's up for debate on Monday. It's not in your budget package or anything like that. But I've noticed, and I've noticed a few references to it as a previous budget line for a heritage program that no longer exists in the town. So this is something that I've been thinking about lately, because I've also noted that there are a number of heritage buildings for sale right now in Sackville. 131 Main, the Allison House, just across from Mount Allison University there between Mount A and the Duck Pond. Between the Duck Pond and the Waterfowl Park. That's for sale. The wood block, I believe, has been for sale recently. I don't know if it still is. Marshland's Inn, the Harness Shop, which recently closed down, some smaller properties. The Sackville train station still sits vacant. It occurred to me, you know, in my worst case scenario thinking, I thought, oh my God, you know, what if all these had to be torn down suddenly, you know, because no one was taking care of them or that kind of thing. There's a lot of heritage out there in Sackville and the look of the town to a certain degree. And it's all sort of out there on the market. And I thought I would throw this out to you just to get your thoughts. And I know this isn't something that you're being asked to make decisions about, but as counselors, have you given thought to, you know, heritage in Sackville, its importance to, you know, either the cultural life of the town or the economy of the town, and what role town council might play in that, given that there is no program at the moment? But do you think that there should be in the future? Is that something that you think, you know, in when you look ahead to the next few years of your term, do you think this will be something that comes up for you personally as a counselor? Who wants to take a stab first? I'm springing it on you.
I can respond to that. So I think we will have to address it. I know exactly what you're saying when you say this is sort of this line item that sort of popped up in the budget. So I think we'll have to address it in a way, because some of those buildings, all of the ones that you mentioned, they are really important to town anyway. And, you know, anybody who walks downtown and sees the woodblock, or, you know, I at least go, oh my God, you know, this is such a fabulous building. My thinking is we'll have to address it, but I haven't dug into what we currently do, and whether we address it through our current municipal plan. But I'm pretty sure we'll need to address it in our municipal plan review, just in terms of what is it we want, because heritage buildings need to be part of that conversation among all the other conversations we need to have, such as, low-cost housing opportunities in Sackville needs to come on the table with that. What do we do with climate change needs to be on the table for the municipal plan. So I suspect, and I'm hoping, if not, we'll have to put it into the considerations with the municipal plan. I'm hoping it comes up in there. I'm not exactly sure. I know enough about the background that I know this is a pretty complicated topic in Sackville. Mm-hmm. And we will have to address it. We can't sweep that under the rug, but I'm hoping that the municipal plan review will give us an opportunity to do that.
Right. Yeah. Councillor Michael Tower, you might have a bit more familiarity with, you know, what the town had been doing heritage wise previously.
Yes. It wasn't the perfect situation. One of the items that really bothered me with the heritage protection was that you weren't allowed to put this type of window in. It may look exactly the same as the original, but they wouldn't let you put the new energy efficient type window in that looks the same. It had to be still a wood frame, whatever else. It took a while to get the heritage to stop looking at it that way and allow for those other things. I think Sabine's right. It has to come up, and it should be coming up through the municipal plan, because I think that is the place to deal with it. There are a lot of beautiful buildings in this town, and we have to find some way to protect it because it is our history. But we have to do it carefully and make sure it doesn't get out of hand, but still at the same time gives people a chance to improve their property. And does that mean we have a fund set aside to help it, but with guidelines, but not, I don't think we can go heavily restrictive. And I think that was one of the biggest issues, pardon me, that was happening through You know, when I think of Ava Jones when he wanted to build his drive, build his house on Bridge Street, and he battled with them, and they said, "Well, no, you can't have your garage out in front of your house because no other house on that street has them out front." So they made him put it on the side of the property, and now, of course, to get into his garage, it's a convoluted way to get in. It's not smooth in, smooth out, and all for what reason? You know, aesthetics. Mm-hmm. You know, just because back then people didn't have the garages, and it would have been a different house on that larger piece of property. So I think we have to look at it. We can't ignore it or sweep it under the rug, as Sabin says. And I think during the municipal review, we'll have some nice conversation over that.
Yeah, it's interesting. And there's so many different scales at work, as you say, like, you know, heritage rules can apply to people's homes. But then, you know, and, you know, something like the harness shop is sort of a bite-sized heritage property. But a lot of the other ones we've got in town, like the woodblock and even 131 Main and the Marshlands, these big, big, beautiful old sort of buildings. They're so substantial that this is not something that... I mean, who can take it on, I guess, is the real question. And it'll be an interesting conversation, especially now that you also have this multi-purpose building, this new multi-purpose building, you know, sort of on the agenda or being talked about anyway. Yeah. So, listen, I appreciate your time today, folks. And we look forward to hearing this council debate on Monday to see what you're going to be talking about and to hear the rest of the decisions as they get made. Thanks very much for joining us, Michael Tower and Sabin Dietz. I appreciate it.
Thank you
for having us.
I appreciate the invite.
All right. You've been listening to CHMA Talks on CHMA 106.9 FM in Sackville, New Brunswick.